Thank you so much. That is one of those songs I can't hear too many times. You really like it. Fred Small's greatest gift to our UU movement of beyond. He wrote that, must have been a good 20 years ago now. Fred is now he's the minister at the First Parish UU Church in Cambridge. Like I said, that's his legacy for us among the other many good things he does in his ministry. The Time magazine essay ran many years ago, but it's one of those pieces whose message has stood up well over the years. It was by the journalist Barbara Ehrenreich. She titled it, "Oh, Those Family Values." Here's some of what she said. Theoretically, and sometimes actually, the family nurtures warm, loving feelings, uncontaminated by power, greed, or hunger. Within the family, and often only within the family, individuals are loved for themselves, whether they're infirm, incontinent, infantile, or eccentric. At best, the family teaches the finest things human beings can learn from one another: generosity and love. But it can also be where we learn nasty things, like rage and shame. Americans act out their ambivalence about the family without ever owning up to it. Millions adhere to creeds that are militantly pro-family. But at the same time, millions flock to therapy groups that offer to heal the damage inflicted by family life. Well said, is that right? I came across a more humorous take on this essay sometime later. A New Yorker cartoon shows a young college student writing home to his parents. He says, "Dear Mom and Dad, thanks for giving me such a wonderful childhood. You ruined any chance I ever had of being a famous writer." As some of you know, I do a little English teaching now and then as an avocation. I try to impress upon some of the aspiring writers in my classes that no, one need not have a tortured childhood in order to be a good writer. That's been the basis of some, but it doesn't need to be for everyone. To return to Ms. Ehrenreich, she does point out what a mixed bag a phenomenon like family really is, and the very wide variety of images and memories and emotions that just the term alone can evoke. I'm sure for some of your most cherished thoughts and feelings derive from your family of origin or the family that you're a part of now. However, in many ways in those families can be constituted. Thank you again for your wonderful tribute to your mother this morning. That was very moving. And for others, as we know, the same term can evoke memories and feelings that perhaps are not near as positive, or that recall unresolved conflicts and tensions, both from the past and that may still exist today. And even in some cases, there are persons who live in estrangement from their family of origin. I would guess that many of us experience some mix of the many and varied emotions and variables that a term like family calls forth. So what then are family values? Simply put, they are the values we learn and that grow out of the relationship we have with our family of origin, and the values that undergird and support family life in all of its variety of forms. And that, I know, is a very circular kind of a definition. So let me see if I can unpack it a little bit. For openers, every one of us has some kind of family relationship and connection that shape our lives, ones that we need to understand, come to terms with, be grateful for in some instances, perhaps find ways of forgiving in others. But I say everyone has some connection with a family, and while that may sound self-evident, I recall a stretch of time, I think it was in the early 70s, where some alleged experts on family theory were claiming that the traditional family structure was on its way out and outlived its usefulness. It's true that during that time, the family has certainly changed. What was really, I think, going on in that period of time, the 70s, 60s, 70s, was not so much the end of the structure of the family as the roles and understandings of men and women were being quite significantly redefined. It was simply a question of working through that. Actually, if we go back a number of centuries, we find that families were really primarily constituted for social and economic reasons. They were there to provide a basic societal economic unit for bringing children into the world, socializing them, teaching them a trade or how to be parents themselves so they could go on and do the same in turn. If you really take the broad overall span of human history, having a family begin by two people falling in love and getting married and maybe beginning a family of their own, that's a fairly relatively recent thing in the way families have operated. It's a good thing, to be sure. I've kind of liked it myself, but it's not a timeless phenomenon. So the past 30, 40 years, the family has evolved quite a bit, but it hasn't died or become radically rearranged, as a psychiatrist like David Cooper wrote about in a book he called The Death of the Family. So when it gets now, when I reflect on what it is that constitutes a family and what family values are, I think more in terms of what it is that we want a family to do and what we need and expect of it, more so than how it's actually constituted or who specifically makes it up. And when I get in that frame of mind, I can't improve a whole lot on some words that I use in the child dedication and naming ceremonies. I've done some of them in the sanctuary here, done them for other families that wish to come in and have it as a family ceremony. Here's some of what I say. Each human life is bound with others, and this is especially true within the family. It is here that each person is shaped and formed by all the interactions of thought, affection, of act and word. In the relationships of the family, we receive our sense of what is right and wrong, our sense of worth and personhood, our feeling of who we are, and what our unique place in this world is. Now, I usually say these words, not standing up here in a pulpit, but usually standing down here with a couple standing next to me, holding their holding their child with family and friends in attendance. And those words always seem to connect. They seem to strike some deep, resonant chord. And I'm aware, as well as I reflect upon them closely, that these words could also speak to a religious community or to a close and intimate circle of people in relationships with one another. In fact, I know for some that a religious community or that close circle of friends takes on the role that these words describe and point to. But then the other thing I think about as I look at these words is, gee whiz, that's really asking a heck of a lot from one very human and fragile institution like the family. To shape and form a person, to offer a sense of worth and personhood, to offer knowledge of right and wrong, to be a place where persons find their own unique personhood. This is what we expect of families and all their various structures, in addition to providing for some of the more material and functional needs of life. As I say, that's something that does ask a lot. And I don't think any family is going to completely, all the time, always come up to that. But we should also bear in mind that the family is the most human of our human institutions, meaning it is directly subject to some of the best and, unfortunately, some of the worst of human beings and all else in between. Some of us, many of us, I take it, have come out of family settings, as I know I have, where we can primarily feel gratitude that these kinds of needs and expectations that I referred to were to a large degree fulfilled. I know that there are others of us who are looking for ways to come to terms with the fact that their families did not meet these needs and expectations, or who perhaps are even looking for ways to forgive those who were either unable or unwilling to be about meeting those needs. In his book called Traits of a Healthy Family, the author, Peter Collier, observes, "Your family is what you've got. It's your limits and your possibilities. Sometimes you'll get so far away from it you think you're outside its influence forever. Then, before you figure out what's happening, it will be right beside you, pulling the strings. Some people get crushed by their families. Others are saved by them." Crushed, saved, or some of both. Mr. Collier makes a wise observation in noting that your family of origin is something you never completely walk away from. And this brings us to what I consider to be the greatest irony in terms of what is needed or expected of one's family of origin. One's family of origin, however weak or strong, functional or dysfunctional, crushing or saving, is the institution, the social unit, against which we, against we define ourselves, take responsibility for ourselves. Even in those cases where perhaps someone is completely or largely estranged from his or her family, that person has to define him or herself in part in the face of that estrangement. And I've seen cases where even in a situation like this could have a positive outcome, where persons in such a situation are still able to create for themselves a network of love and care and support that is their family, a place where they find their own worth and personhood, which is what a family, healthy family, is supposed to offer. I'm going to take one more turn for this morning. Some of you may remember I speak to this topic from time to time, and when I do, in past years, I devote part of what I have to say to making a case for same-sex marriage, knowing, even as has been the case in most years past, I'm largely preaching to the choir, as they say. I was kind of hoping to lay all that aside this year, thinking the matter had been pretty well settled, at least here in our state of New Hampshire. Well, not quite. We're all aware of the attempts to overturn what I consider to be a basic civil right, the right of same-sex as well as opposite-sex couples to enter into civil marriage. I have no need to restate that case again now, only to offer a reminder, if you need it, that the debate goes on. We keep our antenna out for it. I was very pleased last fall with the response of so many of you in this congregation testifying against the attempt to repeal same-sex marriage in our state. The issue is on the shelf for now. It will be taken off the shelf again, probably this coming fall. When I think about this, I think back to a column that Cal Thomas ran several years ago on the subject. Mr. Thomas is a one-time spokesperson for the Moral Majority. He's now a syndicated news columnist, occasional news commentator for Fox News. And in this column, it was pretty predictable for about the first 8 or 9 paragraphs. He wrote about how same-sex marriage was the latest indicator of not only the decline of family values, but also the decline and fall of all that's right, decent, and moral about Western civilization, and on like that for a while. Something odd happened when he got to his last paragraph. He kind of ran out of gas, or something. He seemed to come to his senses. Listen to what he said. Pro-family groups have been giving it their best shot, but this debate over same-sex marriage is over. They would do well to spend their energy and resources building up their side of the cultural divide and demonstrating how their own precepts are supposed to work. Divorce remains a great threat to family stability, and there are far more heterosexuals divorcing and cohabiting than there are homosexuals wishing to marry. Then the great line. If religious conservatives wish to influence culture, they will redirect their attention to repairing their own cracked foundation. An improved heterosexual family structure will do more for the greater good than attempts to halt the inevitable. Gee, Cal, I couldn't have said it better myself. It's amazing how sane and articulate a columnist like Mr. Thomas can become when I agree with what he's saying. And I'd like to believe Mr. Thomas when he says this debate is over. Well, not quite. And as long as it persists, many of our voices will be heard in it. One way or another, it seems this issue will be with us for some time and will still warrant attention and vigilance. But for this morning, it's time to close. In the end, for me, the phrase family values is really part of my ongoing vision and my hope for this congregation, a vision and a hope that I assume will outlast my time here. I'm speaking of the values of love and acceptance, about the value of our being a welcoming place for a variety of families, those with children, those without, those with two parents have either opted for the same genders, those with none. They're all families, and this is their spiritual home and their welcoming and gathering place. For those who may be bereft of family right now, or those who may be feeling their family ties diminished, or for those who are still healing from the wounds of family, as Ms. Aaron Wright refers, my hope is that within this congregation, they will find the care, the compassion, the affirmation, and the support that any healthy family provides. A family for everyone, right here and now, in this place that we call home. The song that best states this hope is the very first one in our hymnal. It's number one. So let's conclude our service by singing that together.